Have you ever been waist deep in a dumpster seeing what wonderful trinkets you could find in there? Well, today's guest has, and we can't wait to share this one with you.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Fire Drill. We are so excited to have Laura here. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Jay and Gwen.
Oh, you're welcome. And Gwen's here too.
Hey, everyone.
Hello, hello. All right, Laura, why don't we start by having you tell everyone a little about yourself?
Okay. I am in my late 40s, so I'm a little older than probably many of the people listening to this podcast. And I came to FIRE probably, I don't know, I think I came to it long ago, just not knowing the word, although not in the traditional sense. I have a strong sense of wanderlust and studied abroad and backpacked abroad, was a Peace Corps volunteer. And I saw people at that time, you know, living a different way of life, picking grapes in the summer in Europe and just not doing the mainstream things. And so I think it got me thinking even back then that life could be lived a little differently. So I pursued my international interests for a while and lived overseas and then worked in Washington, D.C. And now I've settled in St. Petersburg, Florida. And for the first time, I don't have a traditional job. I am pursuing an interest in sustainability that has evolved over the years. And I'm trying to bring that emphasis on sustainability and I guess a more regenerative approach to our environment into the financial independence conversations.
Well, welcome to the show. And before we get into the sustainability conversation, which I know we definitely want to have, we need to talk about the main event of this episode, which is dumpster diving. So Laura, please tell us, how did you get into this?
I first heard about dumpster diving when I was living in Washington, D.C. There was a co-housing house or intentional community near me in Washington, D.C. And I learned that they were dumpster diving to augment the food for their house. And I, at that time, had also seen a documentary called Dive highlighting some dumpster diving going on in L.A. And I just hated the thought of food waste. So I joined this group on one of their dumpster diving forays and was really struck to see how much still edible, not gross food they were able to retrieve from the dumpsters and not even really having to get into the dumpsters to get it, although some of them did, and how the dumpsters were relatively clean and it was quick and fast and, you know, back to the group house to clean the food. And so it just made a very strong impression on me. And when I settled here in Florida, you know, I did a little searching, but I found some more dumpsters with very good food that's still edible, and I just started going out and getting it for myself and with friends and sharing it with others.
So what type of food and finds are you finding in these dumpsters?
Okay, so for food, typically lots of bananas that sometimes are still in pretty decent shape. Sometimes they're a little brown, so they could be used for banana whip ice cream or banana bread, lots of different produce. There's actually one of the places that I dumpster dive regularly is a natural health food store. And they're, I wouldn't say supportive of dumpster diving, but they will make it easier. They will put produce in boxes and it's either on top of everything in the dumpster or next to the dumpster, which makes it easier. So it's not even really dumpster diving. You know, there's coconut oil, jars of coconut oil, because coconut oil leaks so often and it's so greasy. I mean, lots of snack bars. I mean, really pretty much everything, almond butter, crackers, eggs, you name it. It's all about the timing of when you get there. And, you know, especially for foods that are cold, you know, if they've been in there and they're no longer cold, you don't want to take them. But there really is a wide range of food.
So I worked at a bakery in high school, and at the end of the day, we had all of the leftover like rolls and bread. And when I first worked there, I thought, well, why are we putting this all in the dumpster? Why can't we just donate it? And I found out that these places can't donate these items because they could get sued or something like that. And that's why the dumpster has such good quality finds. Is that similar to what you're seeing?
Well, I wonder about that because we do have the Good Samaritan Law, which President Clinton signed. And so that is supposed to, you know, free stores of that liability. And so, I mean, I think maybe people don't know, maybe business owners don't know about that law, the Good Samaritan Law. I think it's just that, you know, space is limited in a store. And when the new stuff is delivered, they've got to get the old stuff out of there. A lot of it is also, they want things to look pretty. And if an apple is bruised or, you know, just slightly off, or there's a hole in a potato, they're not going to display it because that's just what consumers expect is perfect produce.
Do you know that over 40% of food in the U.S. is wasted?
Yes.
She definitely knows. Yeah. The rest of us. I mean, Gwen, was it you who was talking about imperfect produce?
No, that was not me.
Oh, okay.
I think that might have been somebody from Camp Mustache.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Imperfect Produce, it's an online subscription service where they send all the produce that doesn't meet the regulation for the grocery store or for whatever, the distributor's guidelines. Like, it could be too small. There's like a size requirement, whatever. And you can get that shipped to you. And my husband has a coworker who does that. And they say it's awesome and like super cheap. So I think it's a great option for people to help on this food waste front. But dumpster diving is definitely a more eccentric one, I would say. So can you give everyone a picture of like who is the type of person who dumpster dive? What was your financial picture like when you got started doing this?
So when I started, I was working as a consultant in Washington, D.C. I was working only part-time, but I had a very good hourly rate as a consultant. So it wasn't for the economic reason that I started. It was actually, I really only did it that one time in D.C. before I moved. Here, I am making less money than I was in Washington, D.C., and this certainly helps. But that's not the main reason I do it. It's just that I don't see the rationale for throwing out food. You know, I see a wide variety of people at the dumpster. Now, granted, most of the people I see at the dumpster, although not all of them, you know, their financial situation is far worse than mine. But I will say that a lot of my friends are just people, you know, within my socioeconomic group that I meet that find out I dumpster dive are very interested and have asked me to take them with me to show them how to do it. They say that, but I think it's more that they just want company. There's no strategy or real technique to dumpster diving.
I see. Although when we first were talking about having you on, I didn't think of dumpster diving like, oh, you need to pick the good dumpsters. Like, you're not just going to any old dumpster. This is not like Walmart dumpster, although maybe that'd be a good one. I don't know. But going to like the health food stores, the natural food stores, getting the products like the coconut oil, never would have thought of that.
Yes. I most frequently dive and most strategically at that natural health food store and Aldi. So many people, you know, on the path of financial independence are talking about retire early, talk about Aldi. And I always look in the dumpster outside of the Aldi before I go in and shop because that can be a very, very prolific dumpster.
Oh my gosh, that's the first stop. You go to the dumpster and then see what you need after. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure someone is wondering this, maybe everybody. Have you ever gotten sick from dumpster diving?
I have not yet. I am very careful. I have not gotten sick from eating anything. The other thing I do is I dumpster dive at thrift stores, small thrift stores. We Americans own so much stuff that the thrift stores can't even handle it. So there's often dumpsters brimming with stuff behind thrift stores. And I will also dumpster dive at local universities at the end of the semester. And I do wonder if maybe I caught a flu bug from being on campus at a university with all the germs from the stressed out students at the end of the semester.
As a student who got mono at the end of the semester, you probably caught that from them. Yeah.
Okay. But anybody that doesn't go drive around their local university or college at the end of the semester is literally wasting money because they're throwing away so much good stuff because they just can't take it with them when they go home and they don't want to get a storage unit. So they just throw it out and buy new at the beginning of the next year. Like, how ridiculous is that?
That's very true.
I picked up an awesome set of shelves one year at the end because somebody just threw it away. And I was like, well, there's nothing wrong with it.
So what kind of stuff have you gotten at thrift stores?
Oh, boy. I've gotten many different things. So I've gotten a brand new Rosetta Stone Swedish set. A lot of this I sell on eBay, and I think I sold that for probably almost $100. It had never been opened. I've found really nice coffee makers, and even if they're missing a part, I can usually just sell the main unit or sell the parts as, you know, replacement parts. Lots of books. You should never buy Christmas decorations. Our thrift store dumpsters are so full of Christmas decorations, it's just depressing if people own so many of them. That's not necessarily something I'd take out to sell, but these dumpsters are teeming with things. Rare books, newer books, obscure books, many different things.
Books of all kinds.
So we thought we had the Goodwill hack of all time, because we had one episode focused on Goodwill, and then we had a second one where we talked about it. We'll link to both of those in the show notes in case anyone hasn't listened to those. But what we didn't talk about was going to the dumpsters next to the Goodwill and getting all the items. And I think you just made like the ultimate Goodwill hack right there.
Well, I think what's even better than Goodwill or Salvation Army, I've seen those stores are so big and they're so well staffed and so well run that I think they have staff trained to look for things. It's the smaller independent thrift stores is what I think, where they don't have the staff, the infrastructure to deal with and recognize the materials. Not to stop anyone from checking a Goodwill dumpster, but they're usually, you know, the Goodwill stores, at least the newer ones, have cameras. They have trash compactors as well because they're so big and they get so much stuff. Certainly check them out, but don't get discouraged. If you don't see potential, go find your smaller thrift stores.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. So what's the profit potential here? Like, would you say in a year, what's the most you've ever done in terms of like flips from the trash?
Well, I've only really been doing this for 2 years, and I don't do it full time. I just do it if it's a nice day and I'm riding my bike and I want to go by, or if I'm driving by and I'll stop. So, you know, just doing it whimsically like that, I'm probably going to make $4,000 or $5,000 a year or this year. So I would think if someone, you know, really wanted to do it more seriously, you could, you know, at least 3 or 4 times that, if not more. You know, going back to the sustainability, I don't want to be in my car driving around from thrift store to thrift store. This is something I do if I'm driving by or if I can ride my bike to it. It can be my exercise and time outside.
I think I just fell out of my stool. Gwen, did you expect her to say four? I thought she was going to say like $400 or $500 or something.
I did not expect 10x that. Wow. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, before we move on to sustainability, any last tips or pieces of advice for anyone listening who wants to get started with dumpster diving?
Just get over the stigma and the fear and do it. Or maybe even, you know, find some friends, mention it to friends. Maybe they'll surprise you and want to try it. In New York City, they have a meetup twice a month where people go out and dumpster dive. It's a freegan meetup in New York City, and they'll dumpster dive twice a month together. So you could try and find a group to go with if you want to try it.
Meetup.com?
You know, I'm not sure. I think just Google search Freegans New York City. It'll take you to their page.
Cool. Okay. And, you know, legally, I know you can't put things in dumpsters that are not your own. There's no legal ramifications of taking things out of dumpsters that are not your own, right?
Well, from my understanding, it's a gray area. It depends on where the dumpster is placed. It varies from state to state and, you know, city to city and county to county. So I think no matter where you are, if the dumpster is in a public alley, then whatever gets put in there is then becomes public property. The bigger question is when it's on private property. And so Aldi certainly isn't out there with welcoming opening arms saying, come dive our dumpster. I have been shooed away by the employees or sometimes just ignored, but they have never called the police. And one time when I was diving at that much loved natural health food store here, a police officer did drive by and I just told him I was playing sustainable warrior and trying to defer things from the landfill. And he just drove on and wished me a good evening.
So you
sustainable
play
warrior, that's
happy
fantastic.
Hippie card or something. That's interesting.
There you go.
Yes. Well, I guess maybe not everyone can do that. I can imagine that being dicey, but I'm glad that you can do that. Okay.
So walk us through like what happens to the things that you get out of the dumpster. What happens if it's something that's like slightly wilted greens or something?
If it's something that I wouldn't want to eat. It's a little bit beyond. Then I run a backyard plant nursery and I compost. I have a pretty decent sized compost pile. So some of it will get composted and turns into soil that I then use to pot plants and then sell. And I also have some friends that have chickens. So I will take those greens or wilted produce to my friend with the chickens. And then from time to time, I will get fresh eggs from my friend's chickens.
So you're turning wilted greens from the dumpster into farm fresh eggs.
Yes.
For free.
Yes.
That is amazing.
And keeping them out of the landfill or the burn. Here in my county, we incinerate most of our trash. So, and that food just slows down the burn because it's so wet. It makes it less efficient. So to me, it's infuriating that it's legal to throw all of that food in the dumpster and then add it to our burn here at the incineration plant. But it can be considered illegal or discouraged from taking it out of the dumpster and keeping it out of that stream.
That's a very good point. So transitioning into the sustainability, what is the most important thing to you regarding that? And how does that fit into your fire or financial independence mission?
Well, I think, you know, we have this word sustainability that's well recognized and it's important. It's a good thing to be focused on. So sustainability is about sustaining the status quo, sustaining where we are. But there's also a conversation going on in other realms beyond sustainability, talking about regenerative, you know, regenerative agriculture, regenerative businesses, regenerative practices, you know, kind of healing and restoring the damage we've caused, not just sustaining it. And so I'm really interested in, you know, going beyond where the sustainability conversation is and trying to get, for those that are interested in investing in it, finding ways for us to invest in these regenerative practices, these regenerative businesses, and then use that as our, you know, investment portfolio to get us closer to financial independence.
What are some easy ways that people who may not be ready to commit to the compost dumpster life cycle, what are the easy ways that you think like people can just get involved in something like this or like make their fire path more sustainable?
Let's see. Well, that's part of it. It does take more effort to do this. I think for the sustainability easy things, you know, that's where people go into the conversation about, you know, zero waste, thinking about how much, you know, plastic you bring into your house, packaging, you know, trying to grow some of your own food. You know, those conversations are already happening on some of those sustainability blogs that are burgeoning in the financial independence community. What I'm trying to steer people to isn't quite that easy. It does take more effort. So, I mean, I think, you know, thinking local, shopping at your farmer's market, trying to keep your money as local as possible. You know, we talk about in the financial independence community that we want to build community. We want to live in these thriving communities. We want to have thriving communities so that when we're working less in our W-2 jobs, that we have this wonderful community around us to spend time in. But if we're always sending our money out of our community, we're not going to have a great community to spend time in once we're not working anymore. So I think if you can buy grass-fed meat from time to time from the local grass-fed vendor at your farmer's market or whatever little thing you can do here and there to keep your money local is a very good thing.
Do you not invest in index funds because they invest in companies that don't agree with your lifestyle?
Yes, I don't. I have some money still in a more socially responsible account, but even those companies, that includes companies like Apple and Johnson & Johnson and Bank of America. And for me, those companies, you know, Johnson & Johnson, they push consumer products, you know, and here in the financial independence community, we are trying to focus on purchasing less, but we invest in companies that encourage people to buy more. Or Bank of America, financial services, so many of them have predatory practices or, you know, extractive practices that they're just pushing products that are taking advantage of the resources of the planet that are limited. So I do have a little bit of money in some of those socially responsible index funds, but I'm hoping to transition even that out of it and find other ways to invest it.
Who's on the naughty list for companies that you wouldn't invest in?
I think many of the companies on the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, ideally, My portfolio would be predominantly invested in regenerative agriculture. So farms that are trying to restore the land and work on a profit, or slow money, which is about investing in your local food system. So investing in local food businesses, or investing in sustainable local businesses, businesses that are trying to work on renewable energies or solve other climate related issues.
Okay, so let's talk about your personal financial independence journey. So let's talk about your financial goals first.
Okay, so my financial goals are to learn more about the options for investing that are in line with my values that I have started to learn about, and get more money directed into those. Because right now I have a significant chunk of money just sitting in a bank account waiting to be directed out to these opportunities. And then, you know, building wealth through those and sharing that information with others that are interested so that they can do it. And then also simultaneously working on, you know, continuing my active income generation streams like the dumpster diving and the backyard plant nursery and maybe a few other things. And then also trying to come up with some passive or residual income opportunities for myself. I get inspired listening to you girls with what you're doing on Etsy, you know, thinking about digital downloads, but again, trying to think, you know, more of along the sustainable regenerative lines of, I don't want to be creating a plastic product and selling that. That's why I especially like these digital downloads and just ebooks and e-document type things to sell.
The digital downloads are nice. Do you have a number like, oh, I'm looking for $6,000 per month and I need that to live and I'm 2 years away from it? Like, what does that look like on your financial runway?
You know, I don't. I'm not a numbers spreadsheet person. And in fact, my latest blog post, I wrote about multiple forms of capital or multiple forms of wealth. So for me, I think there's more to it than just dollars. I think there's so much more to be tapped. There's social capital. You know, Vicki Robin has talked a lot about social capital and financial interdependence. I think, you know, I grow a lot of my own food as well as sourcing it from the dumpster. I think, you know, having connections with people, my neighbor helped me move a shed recently that I would have paid so much money to have someone move. And I just, you know, offered him a token dollar amount that was a fraction of what I would have paid. So no, I don't have a concrete dollar amount in mind because I think there's so much more to it than just money.
That's fair. So where do you see yourself when you've reached financial independence?
Well, I think it's sort of like now. I mean, maybe it just, I think the income generation streams will hopefully be more on autopilot. But right now, I live a very, very fun life. You know, I like dumpster diving. I like being outside. I like riding my bike. I like working in my backyard plant nursery with my plants. You know, that's been a goal of mine, is to live like I want to and make money while I do it. That's what I'm doing already.
What are your other income sources?
So I have a roommate, and that is my largest influx of income, because I own my house outright. And so then there is all of the dumpster diving, selling, and the backyard plant nursery. Those are the three main ones.
So it kind of reminds me of the Vicki Robin approach, where your life itself is just, it almost is down to like the basics, sort of. It's not that expensive. So reaching financial independence is not this like big moment, like you're running through the finish line. It's like, oh, well, I already am doing everything I can to live more simply.
That is a very astute observation. I hadn't even made that one quite yet. But yes, I think that's pretty accurate.
Nice. All right. Well, is there any last things that you want to tell our audience about you or your story before we go into the final two?
I think we've covered it.
Oh, I have one more thing. What do you think your annual spending is per year?
That is a very good question. And I, again, I'm not a numbers or a spreadsheet person, but I would say maybe somewhere between 12 to 15,000. It's not that much.
That's so low. That's amazing.
Well, I did just have to put out 1500 for my air conditioner this week, so it might be a little more, but the dumpster diving really helps because it's not just food. I mean, I go to a lot of swap meets. I'm very active in my Buy Nothing group. I buy a few things on eBay. I don't want to say that I never buy anything, but I get, you know, much of what I need at swap meets on the Buy Nothing group from the dumpsters. So, and I'm frugal and I enjoy things that are free. I think there's so much out there to do that's fun and free. And luckily I have a boyfriend that feels the same way. You know, our date night for us can be either dumpster diving or riding our bikes to the beach for sunset.
I love that. That's awesome. Very cute.
It sounds so romantic.
I know,
riding
right?
your bikes along the beach at sunset.
What's your perfect date? Well, that's awesome.
April 25th.
April 25th. I know. I wanted to quote it too. I'm glad you did.
Millennials.
Millennials. Hashtag. All right. So Laura, thank you so much. Now it's time for the final two. Gwen, I'll have you kick it off.
Laura, if people would like to get in touch with you after listening to this, how can they do so?
Okay, so my blog is triplebottomlinefi.com. And so the triple bottom line is people, planet, and profit. That's why I chose that name, trying to focus more on that. And that, again, is triplebottomlinefi.com altogether. And my email address is triplebottomlinefi@gmail.com if anyone wants to reach out to me.
Great. And now to our final question. Laura, what is your wildest dream?
Well, it goes back to what we talked about a little bit already. I just hope that someday it'll be intuitive and just more of a priority for individuals, businesses, and governments to prioritize regenerative closed loop practices, you know, that will look to nature for this closed loop system example where there is no waste. Everything gets used. I just think that's a beautiful model, and I'd like to see us turn to that more and incorporate it in everything we do.
Thanks, Laura, for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been fun.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.